Welcome to Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original. It has been quite the long time since Mego and I have done a show together. Mego, how are you on this gorgeous Saturday here in the city of Boston?
I'm doing wonderfully. It's starting to feel like football weather today.
Yes, it is.
It's one of those mornings where, compared to earlier in the week, the humidity is lifted. Mm-hmm. You walk out, you need like a little light sweater or something when you walk the dog in the morning. And you're like, okay, it's coming. I was at the stadium last night for the electric in-stadium practice.
Ooh, was it electric?
In which the offense kind of looked like butt, so we'll get into that.
Okay.
I'll have better descriptors next hour when we get into football, but yeah, that's what I was doing last night, and just listening everywhere I went. Honestly, I went to two different stores because I had to get new binoculars for Patriots training camp.
Nice.
And in both stores, I just heard dudes bitching about the Red Sox. And I was like, simultaneously, I feel like this is an indicator that the Red Sox have been back, that we're back to just casually walking in anywhere in the greater Boston area and listen to dudes bitch about the Red Sox.
Yeah, because people actually care.
Exactly. And I'm like, man, you guys really screwed this up.
Yeah.
And just outside of all the, hey, what are these prospects worth? Or is your farm system overrated once you promote Roman Anthony and others, and we're looking at the prospects that they had that are their, you know, third and fourth prospects, and they're actually the eighth and ninth prospects just a month and a half ago, and what does that mean? All that aside, people cared about this team, and you're alienating them. And thank God they won last night, but I still maintain from the bigger picture that I think this ownership group is really pushing the fan base to the brink of alienation.
100%, because the last couple years has been nothing but indifference, because there were no moves, no significant moves at the deadline, even if the team was close to 500, right around 500, and then they would fall apart in August. They have not had a winning record in the month of August since, what, 2019? So it has been going on 6 years now that they haven't had a winning record in the month of August. Last night was a good start for the Red Sox in this month, though. Roman Anthony gets his first career walk-off in the 10th inning against the Astros. The Astros had a 1-0 lead up until the 7th. And Cooper Criswell, to his credit, pitched great. He's not, you know, Joe Ryan out there on the mound, but you know what? He went out and dealt a little bit for you, and that's what you needed out of a guy making kind of a spot start.
Yeah, you needed, because your offense wasn't there either.
Yeah, your offense was nowhere to be found. Like, you just couldn't produce any runs. It was the top two guys in your lineup that had multiple hits. Then there was only two other guys in the entire lineup that had hits in the game at all. And so you kind of got lucky with that, and you got some help from your pitching. Your bullpen was great in those late innings, from Whitlock to Chapman into Weissert. Like, you were awesome in that regard, but it comes to a question, like, does it even matter? Like, even after the win last night, it was awesome. I was pumped. I loved seeing Roman Anthony hit a walk-off. That was amazing. That's something you want to see in the future more often. But at the end of the day, for this season, does it really matter? You didn't go out and do anything at the deadline. Your acquisitions at the deadline were Dustin May and Steven Matz. And those are nice pieces to add to your team, but they're not like impact arms.
It's marginal upgrade.
Sure.
If you want to give it that much.
Yeah.
And to me, the entire conversation doesn't come down to, was this on John Henry? And the purse strings? Was this on Craig Breslow? It was Craig Breslow inept at the deadline? Was he unable to execute the plan that he had set out? Not even just plan A, but whatever plan B he had, to the point where plan C started to look like, we just got to get some arms in here. We got to get some bodies in the building. We got to literally just, like the meme of the guy with the stick, do something. That's what it felt like at the end, right?
Well, yeah, because we thought the Joe Ryan news was coming through because Yahoo got screwed up. Fox Sports screwed up a little bit. And so you thought, oh, here comes Joe Ryan, and immediately it's Dustin May.
Which wasn't Craig Breslow's fault.
No.
That's stupid aggregators on Twitter.
No, but as fans,
fault.
We get excited. And
right.
Then,
But what I was saying was, I think the question has to be, was it incompetence from Craig Breslow and that he really just couldn't execute what they set out to do in any meaningful, really meaningful, impactful way up to the deadline? Or was this actually kind of the philosophical approach of Craig Breslow saying, this team is still a year away from actually contending, so we're not going to go all in. We're not going to trade an outfielder. We're not even touching the major league roster in order to bring in a rental that will make a significant push in October. But we're going to be not so truthful leading up to it with our messaging and get everybody's hopes up because we like to stoke interest in the team. I think you have to choose one or the other. I really do. Do you think that Craig Breslow just couldn't get it done and misread the situation so poorly leading up to the deadline that he's telling everybody, like, we're going for it, we're bringing in impactful players, everything that he said over the last couple of weeks and that Sam Kennedy in his good faith said as well? Or do you think that it was just, kids are young. We're going to be even better next year. We have Crochet next year. You know, we don't need to sell out completely for this year, just when we might not make it, you know, past, I don't know, the second round of the postseason.
Well, when you listen to Craig Breslow, you hear his excuse that other teams didn't like our players as much as we do. That to me indicates ineptitude. That's not a, oh yeah, we're pushing it off to next season. Because
that he said after the fact indicate ineptitude. Like, it was another very tough press conference for Breslow.
100%. But then even Bob Nightingale comes out yesterday and says that teams hated dealing with him.
Yeah,
he's just like everything gets inserted into a computer, and if they don't win the trade, it feels very. In a way, not quite, it's far worse, but in a way, it's a little bit Danny Ainge-ish in that if he doesn't feel like he's fleecing the trade, he's not going to do it.
That's disrespectful, though, because Danny Ainge actually won trades.
That's true. That's a fair
multiple
point.
Multiple times. Well, I mean, Breslow has not proven...
The Crochet trade seems like a
win. In the offseason, he's been able to be fine. He had a great offseason leading in. His trade deadline last year was dreadful as well, and he tried to do even more this year. He tried to do more last year.
He tried to do more bodies.
And it didn't work. And this team is better positioned. So now I see them trying to spin this, okay? That this team is so much better than last year's team was leading up to the trade deadline, which may be true. But this team was deserving of more improvement.
Agreed.
And now you see out there them being like, well, we already had a really good baseball team. We didn't need dramatic upgrades to this baseball team because, look, they're already really good. They're trying to tell you, we already did the work in the offseason. We already brought these guys in. So don't be mad that we didn't go out and get Joe Ryan or even, you know, Merrill or anybody.
Like, I would have loved Merrill Kelly. Or Charlie Morton. In retrospect,
dude, we're sitting
adding
here
Charlie
begging
Morton would have been
for 40-somethings. We're like, give me a Gen Xer on this team. I don't care.
Give me a boomer. Bring back who's the left? Rich Hill. Bring back Rich Hill. Like, bring back somebody, something. It's just, and it makes it really difficult because I think this team, aside from Breslow and ownership, is really, really likable. Roman Anthony is likable. The energy last night in those late innings was palpable at Fenway Park. People are excited about the young players, the young stars on this baseball team. And then when Breslow goes and fumbles the bag at the deadline, does nothing, absolutely nothing, it makes it really, really difficult to want to root for the team because at the same time, you have to root for that ownership and that front office. And it's just like, these guys are dumb. These guys suck. They don't actually want to invest in you. They don't want to invest in the fans' time, whereas the players do. And it creates this really difficult, it puts you between a rock and a hard place.
I think also, as bad as the trade deadline was, because I just think that these are the barest minimum of upgrades. Like, it's almost like doing nothing to me. You brought in warm bodies. And so I don't give them a ton of credit. But
then they send a reliever down who has, like, what, 13 consecutive scoreless innings in Bernardino?
The messaging before and the messaging after has been extra aggravating to me because they're telling you all this stuff about how hard they worked and how they were making other teams uncomfortable. They were like, well, hey, that's enough. I'm like, what is that? Are they calling up other teams and just offering the same crappy players, like crappy prospects
100%.
Over and over and over again? And that's where they're saying that's enough?
Well, if you believe Cotillo and Ken Rosenthal, they were nowhere close and feeble at best in their attempts at Joe Ryan.
And look, I believe that Cotillo and Sean McAdam were talking to folks from the Twins.
100%.
So they have the perspective from the would-be trade partner. It's not just, oh, somebody from the Red Sox is telling you this and they're spinning it the way they want it. Yeah, they get that perspective, but they have the other side of the actual team who wouldn't execute the trade. We're going through a complete fire sale in Minnesota. And even going back to the All-Star break, Joe Ryan sitting there on camera basically begging to get dealt.
He wanted
Remember
to come to the
that?
Red Sox so
he's,
bad.
He's taking pictures with the Red Sox. Audio. He's on video going, this is so cool. You know,
I love this time of year.
I love Minnesota, but it's cool being here and seeing all the other clubs that I could be a part of in a couple weeks is essentially what he's saying.
Yes.
Like, and they couldn't get it done. And this is the other part that I don't get with the messaging that's frustrating, is there was, we can play this clip in a little bit, but when Breslow's saying, ultimately, as you said, they didn't like our players. They didn't like our farm
like
system.
What?
So we need to have a willing trade partner. We can dangle all the farm system players, all the minor league players. They don't like our prospects. What can we do? Bradfo wrote this, I think it was late last night, but it's up at WEI.com today. He said, while Minnesota had been supremely motivated throughout the deadline, particularly when it came to offloading Carlos Correa's contract, thanks to the impending team sale, moving Joe Ryan served as a luxury item. With two more years of control on the pitcher after the season, the Twins were going to gauge exactly how desperate the Red Sox were willing to get and act accordingly. Ultimately, Minnesota never acted, not informing the Red Sox chief decision makers what level of offer would be needed to pull off the rarest trade deadline transactions, a move for a controllable ace starting pitcher. Okay, first of all, I don't know that you would categorize him necessarily as an ace. I think you can.
He would be the number two on this team.
He'd
be
the
number
two
on
this team. Like,
he's having a career year.
He's having a career year, but you're not trying to make him your ace. But aside from that, Minnesota is supposed to call you back and say, ultimately, you have to give us this, or you have to give us X, Y, and Z. Like, they're the ones that have, they hold the playing cards.
Yeah, they have all the leverage.
And so I'm like, What do you mean they didn't call you back? You gave them an offer.
It's a negotiating tactic.
Said,
you have to up your
they
offer.
They said, no, we don't like that. And then they never called you back, so you just sat there?
How about you call back
sure
with a better offer?
I'm sure it was
offer.
More complicated than that, but that's the theory of it, right?
Yeah.
It's not Minnesota's job to tell you. Unless they're sitting there going, we want Roman Anthony. That's all we want. That's all we want, Roman Anthony, which they're not going to do because they know that nobody, that they're
not
going to
give. And if that was the case,
up.
The Red Sox would have told somebody that and it would have gone out in the media and they would have spun it that way.
That's just weird to me,
yeah,
right?
100%. Like, it doesn't really.
Why is it on Minnesota that they have to, and I understand this is not like Bradford's opinion. This is what the Red Sox are explaining what happened, but it makes me go to the Red Sox. If everybody's telling you, hey, sir, that's enough, please stop calling us with these prospects. Call back and offer something higher. That just tells me that they got to a point where they knew that the price was going to be way too high for Joe Ryan. So they thought, it's probably going to be lower in the offseason after this team sale. We'll go get him then. Which again brings me back to, one, Breslow wasn't prepared for what the market was going to be going
Correct.
Into the trade deadline. So set these expectations, thought he was going to get a guy like this and wasn't able to. And two, doesn't fully believe in the team this year. Thinks the team is going to be better next year, be a true contender next year. So wait till the offseason when the price is going to be much, much lower. Go get Joe Ryan then and add him then and go for it next year.
It's just so frustrating because if you're just thinking that, if that's your way of thinking that next year is going to be the real year that we want to compete for a World Series title, there's so many variables that can happen between now and the start or even beginning of next season, and that players get hurt. Garrett Crochet could blow out his arm in next April. God forbid, knock
I'm
on wood,
Orioles
I don't want
fan.
That.
I can tell you.
Yeah.
It'll go south real quick.
You guys thought you were going to have another great year, and all of a sudden you're the worst team in the division. Like, things change overnight sometimes, especially in baseball. Guys get hurt. Things happen. It's a 162-game season. You can't just expect that you're going to be better next year just because your young players will have another year in. Like, what's to say Alex Bregman's even going to be here next year?
And besides that, exactly.
He could opt out.
You haven't extended
if you didn't. If you haven't even showed him the willingness to put a legitimate, give him legitimate support at the deadline, why would he commit to you next year? He can just opt out and go somewhere else that actually is committed to winning.
I think that's a different conversation where you'd have to gauge how much leverage Bregman thinks he has over the Red Sox after coming off of his injury and having a little bit, I know it's not serious, but a little bit of that injury history. And so I think that's a different conversation. I do think Bregman will be here long term with them.
I hope so.
But at the same time, I think it also comes down to this mixed messaging of going into this year, having a great offseason, saying we understand our fans, we have asked them to wait long enough, and now we're making a push at the major leagues level.
The amount of times they use the word aggressive.
Yeah, and then
urgency.
To have this at the trade deadline and then turn around and try to say, we've got a really good baseball team, guys. We didn't need to be... Okay, so then why last week were you telling us that you're going to be so aggressive?
Yeah.
And that's where it's the mixed messaging to me, because I'm like, what are you actually about? And to me, it reeks of incompetence, because they're trying to tell you one thing. And I think they believe that they were going to do that one thing. And then they just simply couldn't pull it off. And it would be one thing. I understand Joe Ryan didn't move. It'd be one thing if nobody moved. If it was like the prices were so crazy. But everybody else got better.
Yep. Everybody
now,
around you.
So yeah, you have a really good baseball team. And you won last night. And I'm happy for that. And you should be celebrating that as a Red Sox fan. But you should also be hearing the footsteps behind you.
Well, and on top of that, too, it's not even that you had to send out, the number five prospect for Dustin May, whereas lesser prospects were going for better players. It doesn't even make sense. You clearly misevaluated something, whether it was the deadline, your farm system, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, you traded 20% of Rafi Devers for Dustin May.
Like what are we doing? I guess we probably should have seen this coming, right? We knew this front office was incompetent when we saw everything that happened with Rafael Devers. When we saw all of that play out, we understood. We talked about it on this very show, how incompetent they looked, how dumb, and how there was no communication between anybody. And we should have expected at the deadline that incompetence would continue.
And are you surprised, Shyam? Because when you hear the communication from the team, it's nonsensical.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like people talking. Like, if you are...
It's because it's a robot. It's not an actual human being.
And you get a call, all due respect, from Craig Breslow, and he's like, our parameters indicate from the models. You're like, who are you giving up? Who are you giving up, Craig?
Like, Craig, I don't give a rat's ass about your models, bud. Like, tell me what prospects you want to give me for Eugenio Suarez or Merrill Kelly. Please.
Oh, man, you know who's got to be feeling good today, though? The effing stiff guy. The guy who gave the
court.
The guy who got fired for effing stiff.
Oh, 100%. He is, like, kicked back, has a beer. He's like, today's a great day.
Yeah, he's probably working for another club at this point.
Probably. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shyam off and rolling on the Boston Red Sox. They did get the win last night over the Astros in extra innings thanks to a Roman Anthony walk-off. We'll continue with a little bit more discussion about the trade deadline. We'll hear some of what Craig Breslow had to say. His introduction on the Greg Hill Show yesterday for the front office report, I think that is of note. We'll get to all of that coming up here, but right now, Jacob is going to get you caught up with what is trending in the wide world of sports. Mego and Shyam here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Happy Saturday. Beautiful Saturday to you. Almost noontime. Enjoying the beautiful weather out there, I hope. As Mego said, it's almost football weather. We did have a football game the other night. I loved it. It was a blast. I was very thrilled, especially due to the fact that the Boston Red Sox decided to do nothing at the trade deadline. So it really kind of eased the pain a little bit.
Are you one of these people who gets disturbed when you see the Halloween crap in stores in August?
No, not really. I just get it. Like, it's the way stores operate with the holiday seasons. Like, Halloween's over, Christmas stuff is up. Like, I know somebody in particular, I know for a fact, that the day after Halloween, they put their Christmas tree up.
You know somebody like that?
I know somebody like that?
That's disrespectful. That's erasure of Thanksgiving.
I agree. Couldn't agree more. Thanksgiving, arguably the best holiday.
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know. Well, yeah, I guess maybe Christmas is pushing back now that they have football all day on Christmas too. But when you had all day football plus like unlimited food on Thanksgiving, delicious food, by the way, the sides, the best part about Thanksgiving. I mean,
turkey's overrated, dude.
I disagree. I strongly disagree. Turkey with gravy is delightful.
Turkey, great. Yeah, it needs to be a vehicle for so many other things. You need to like slop your mashed potatoes on it. You need butter on that turkey.
Yeah, but stuffing is so good.
Stuffing is great.
Stuffing is carries Thanksgiving.
You can't think about it too deeply because then it grosses you out. But I love some stuffing. Halloween is my favorite holiday, but I'm a creepy person. Really quickly, and then we'll get back to the Red Sox, I promise, because I just put this out on Twitter. I know that Rich Keefe and Greg Hill went to go see Together.
They did, yep.
Do, you're kind of a horror movie person.
I want to go see it.
So I kind of want to see it because I have like this weird gap of a couple hours before my husband gets home from a trip, and I just am not a person who's good at being home alone and bored. So I might go see it, but now I'm hearing that it's kind of a body horror film.
Oh, very much so a body horror
film. Oh, okay. I don't know if I can do that.
Oh, okay.
Like I
You like slasher horror and psychological horror.
Yes, okay. Definitely. Like,
yeah,
I
this
don't
is
know.
Not.
It's a fine line. Like, one of my favorite movies is Silence of the Lambs. But that's more about the like psychological element of it. It's kind of like a mystery box thing that's unfolding. It's not about like, ooh, cannibalism.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't like
he
that
just happens
straight up
to be
gross
a cannibal.
Side. Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to be a cannibal in that movie for it to be successful. He could just be a murderer.
Exactly. Exactly. If he was just a serial killer, I'd be as interested. Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway, about the chase, just like the Boston Red Sox, who did not cannibalize the MLB whatsoever at the trade deadline.
No, they did not. Not at all. Let's go to Justin in New Hampshire. Wants to talk about Breslau. Go ahead, Justin.
Hi, Mega. Good Saturday. Hey, listen, I listened to that interview yesterday with Breslau. It was absolutely torture. The guy is obviously polished when it comes to political type responses and talking points and so forth. I hear him say in that interview what we were willing to do. He should just be honest and say, we weren't willing to do anything. This trickle down is coming straight from the top. It is time for John Henry to sell the Boston Red Sox and restore what he once had. And it's no longer his bright, shiny object. It's obvious. It's going to continue to ruin the organization. It's over. Sell, so, Don, please.
So, Justin, I have a question for you. So why do you believe that it's John Henry? Because if this was free agency, I would tend to agree with you. Because when it comes to just outright paying guys, that's generally who is in charge is the owner. He's the one determining how much money you're spending. That in that instance, I would agree. In this case, I think it was a lot of Breslau overvaluing his prospects, underestimating exactly what the cost would be for guys, and being unable to get anything done.
Brian, I don't disagree with you. I think that Breslau probably does overvalue his own prospects. However, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen the same story all along. Ever since 2018, that's 7 years ago now. Every year we see the same approach, the same dull moves, the same half-you-know-what mediocre bullpen arm coming out. When other teams, I mean, look at, there are 7, 8 other teams that made themselves drastically better. This is just piss poor performance, in my opinion.
All right, Justin, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
So I think where Justin has an overarching point that I'd agree with, this deadline itself in a vacuum is really not about ownership and John Henry and being willing to pay players and all that. It's about misreading the market and sure. Breslau underperforming, overpromising up into that and then telling you, well, it was actually, we got what we needed. So it, you know, yeah, we would have liked to get an higher impact player, but we're happy with what we got. And that simply isn't true. But if you go back, like he said, several years, there is this common theme of how I heard the Midday Show yesterday comparing Chaim Bloom and Craig Breslau and their moves at the trade deadlines and how similar, and it's eerie. To that, I'd say the overarching issue with ownership or whoever's making these huge decisions about hiring the manager, hiring the GM, or whatever title they want to give themselves of baseball operations, Yale graduate, whatever, nerd in chief, is that they're hiring guys who don't seem to have the experience and institutional knowledge to attack these trade deadlines the way that other teams are able to. And so going back to Chaim Bloom, okay, everybody thinks that they brought him up from Tampa Bay because they wanted to build out the farm system and run the team like a Tampa Bay team and cut costs.
And that's what it felt like.
Right. That's what it felt like. Ultimately, probably they had some sense of that and also just liked him and thought he was, you know, cheap and young and somebody that they could build
really
with.
Smart.
Yeah. Now, because of how south things went so quickly with Chaim Bloom and the way that all the relationships there seemed to be extremely strained at the end, remember when they were going through trying to hire for this position again? How many people did they go through?
11?
It was like Gerard 13. Mayo trying to find an offensive coordinator.
Yep.
The job looked toxic to people. And they ended up with Craig Breslau seemingly through Theo and bringing Theo back into the fold and having it be his buddy. And you know, at this point, I think it's fair to look at it and say, is he up to speed enough to be able to execute at the level that a club like the Boston Red Sox demands? It's not Tampa Bay. It's not Baltimore. It's not even, you know, like the Angels. It's not the A's. It's the Red Sox. It's supposed to be a premium club in the entire MLB. And it just seems like if you want to point to anything to ownership, it's that they're bringing in guys who are maybe just not ready and not prepared enough. And maybe that is a cost-cutting kind of thing, cost-saving thing, because the Red Sox are a bit on the back burner behind Liverpool.
Let's go to Derek in Pepperell. What's up, Derek?
Hey, Shime. How are you? Mego, first time being on the radio with you. Doing a great job. Love to hearing you guys. Awesome. Mego, you'll be interested. My mother and I are on our way from back to Massachusetts from Maine, Freiburg, Maine. We were up there for a couple of days.
Oh, beautiful.
My mom just said hello.
Hello. Hi, Mom.
So this is what we, this is, Shime. I believe that, I really think that they did it right, only because of not giving up anybody, a key player. And who's to say that they can't sneak into this thing? I mean, the one thing that bothers me is the errors, obviously. And is that eventually going to catch up with them? I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to say.
Thanks for the call, Derek. Look, I was fine with them saying, all right, our major league club is off the table. We want to deal exclusively in prospects. Because if that's the case, you could have easily gotten a guy like Merrill Kelly, starting pitcher from the Diamondbacks. The Rangers traded their number 5 prospect, number 9 prospect, number 13 prospect. For the Boston Red Sox, that would have been Connelly Early, Yoelin Cespedes, and Juan Valera. Okay, cool. Like, you're not even giving up any of the top 3 prospects you have, which are the really kind of the only names that most people know, which are Franklin Arias, Yostinson Garcia, and Peyton Tolley. You're not giving up any of those guys. You're just giving up prospects in your system, and they probably 99 times out of 100 never come back to bite you. And it would have been fine, and you would have added a legitimate starting pitcher to this rotation with postseason experience. It's a win-win, and yet instead they didn't. Instead, Craig Breslow was probably offering the 20th-ranked prospect for a guy like Merrill Kelly, which was clearly not going to get it done.
So there are reports out there about who they dangled and that it is their, quote, higher-level prospects. You know, you take reports with whatever sources Sure. you think people are talking to. It's not my business to try to sort that out. I just think that you have to have room to adjust, and I understand a fan base that's excited to still have Jaron Duran because they love the player and they didn't want him to move and they bought the jersey. Like, good for you. That's probably a good day for you.
Yeah.
The question is, if you have somebody that you can add to the rotation that is going to push you past another round in the postseason, does that, like, are you really into another series? Is that not worth it to you to give up Jaron Duran?
Well, especially because when you look at it, if Craig Breslow did look at it down the road a little bit, they're probably going to trade Jaron Duran in the offseason anyways.
Like, maybe this is, for Joe Ryan.
Yeah, possibly for Joe Ryan. And so this is not like a move that is totally out of the question. This is a guy that is likely to move in the offseason because you have too many outfielders as it is. Roman Anthony finally made his debut. He's not going anywhere. Sedan Rafaela is a gold glove center fielder that's locked down long term. And then William Abreu, I believe, is younger than Jaron Duran. And I think they like Abreu in right field. And so it's just...
Yeah, better contract, too.
Yeah, a better contract as well. And so they keep those 3 guys. And Duran is a really nice trade piece. He was an MVP talks. He got MVP votes last year. He is turning it on now, midway, halfway through the season, getting ready for that playoff push. He's been really, really good the month of July. And so it was the perfect opportunity for you to sell Duran and bring in a guy like Joe Ryan and give yourself a legitimate 1-2 punch pitching rotation and still have a great outfield and a great lineup. Like,
yeah, I think from like a purely, I don't know, if you take emotion out of it perspective, dangling Jaron Duran to one of these teams, if the Padres were truly so in love with him that they were going to execute another trade to try to get somebody, a pitcher with somewhat control that they could then trade to you, like if that was at all a possibility, which was reported about a couple weeks ago as a possibility, then I think you do that. But at the same time, I'm not gonna like say that fans are stupid because they're happy that Durant's still here. If that's a player that you love, that's a player you love. Like, I was ride or die for Marcus Smart way after it was popular anymore. Yeah. So I get it. Like, and there is something about this club trading away the guy that everybody buys jerseys of and saying, well, what, we're making baseball trades. What do you want?
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, this actually would have been a baseball trade, not a salary dump. So I think it would have gone over a little bit better. But if you're happy that Durant's still here, power to you. That's your guy. I just think that everybody who's looking at the team and saying, look how good they've been over the last 5 weeks. You're missing the point that the other teams made moves to get better.
Yep.
Other teams made moves to get better.
The Yankees bullpen got better. The Mariners added arguably the two best hitters in the trade market to their lineup. They are now better. The Rangers are now better. Like, every other team around you got better and you chose to
do
nothing.
The cost of living went up and you're making the same salary that you made 2 years ago.
100%. Let's go to Nigel in Westwood. Wants to talk about the Sox. Go ahead, Nigel.
Hey, guys. Happy Saturday.
Same to you.
You know, I listened to the fandom doing things like, you know, John Henry has to sell. But John Henry makes more money when the Red Sox are losing. Right? I mean, the TV viewership, according to AI search yesterday morning, is down 6%, right? The Red Sox draw non-baseball fans. They draw and sell tickets because people want to come to Fenway. Owning the Red Sox means you also own Fenway Park. So all the concerts, all the golf, Top Golf, all the Red Bull.
All right, your phone's cutting in and out there, Nigel. But, like, look, I get it.
That's nothing new.
Yeah, we know that Henry is making money, but he doesn't make more money when they're losing.
No.
He makes more money when people are interested.
But I think it's fair to say that, yeah, they're continuing to try to build an infrastructure in and around the park that is not fully dependent on baseball.
Agreed.
They're trying to make it an outdoor mall there right now. Like, they're trying to build their own little Patriot Place around Fenway Park. And that's, you can debate whether you think that's money that could go to payroll or if that's from a completely different part of FSG. I don't know. At the end of the day, I feel like it's all one big purse and you're just taking it from different compartments. But that's nothing new.
If money was why you were mad about the Devers trade, I get it. Money should not be the reason why you're mad about the deadline. It has nothing to do with that. It's because they refused to trade the players necessary to acquire MLB starting talent to bolster their team. Like, that is the crux of the issue from the deadline, is Craig Breslow was not willing to trade what other teams wanted.
I also wonder if, like, Breslow has kind of a type. Maybe it goes back to Andrew Bailey or their staff with these pitchers. Like, these broken down pitchers, they can't get enough of them. They're like, Lucas Giolito, let's go get Walker Buehler.
It's the girl who thinks I can fix him.
Yeah, Walker Buehler. Oh, all right, like, let's go get Dustin May. The guy's had two Tommy Johns.
Like he's a bad guy, but, you know, I think really deep down, he's really nice. I can make him better.
Like, these guys are broken. Yeah. And Giolito has been a lot better, and Buehler has been a roller coaster. I'm not saying, like, I want them to be broken. I hope Dustin May is great here.
Me
and
too.
And I think that would be really fun if he fits into the rotation and everything goes well for him. Nice redemption story. I'm just saying, it seems to look like there's a pattern here with the kind of starting pitchers that they go after and say, no, this will be the number two guy.
It seems very Belichick-esque in that he's just shopping in the bargain bin for former first-round picks that kind of fizzled out and, like, oh, maybe I can make him better and make him work.
He was not going to be in the Dodgers rotation.
No.
And you took him and said, well, if he's not going to be in the Dodgers rotation, he can fit into ours.
Let's go to Rich in Western Mass. What's up, Rich?
Hey, I kind of like Zach Gallen as a target trade candidate over Joe Ryan. I mean, they have a similar track record as far as innings pitched, ERA, strikeouts. But the reason why the Red Sox didn't go after him is because he's a free agent this year, so he's a rental. But if you trade for a rental, you don't have to give as much for someone like Joe Ryan, who's in arbitration and making $3 million a year for the next 3 years. But it just goes to show. But I don't really believe that there's a rental, because the Red Sox can acquire him for next to nothing. The Diamondbacks got rid of Naylor. They got rid of Eugenio Suarez. They just don't want, when he comes up for a new contract at the end of the year, the Red Sox don't want to pay Zach Gallen. And I don't think they had to give up much for him at all. But they know that when it comes time for next year, they certainly won't pay the price to keep him on the team.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Whatever you're eating, I hope it's delicious. But
it is almost lunchtime.
It is. You're right. But no, I think to a degree he's right. I think that is probably the reason the Red Sox didn't target Zach Gallen is because there was no control there. And as a rental. But then again, like Merrill Kelly would also be a rental. Charlie Morton would also be a rental.
Let's not act like he's, you know, Superman.
Yeah, exactly. He's not having some career year here. So I get it that they wouldn't have had him under control, but they're the Red Sox. They can pay contracts. It's not that hard. And again, as Mego pointed out, he's a 5.6 ERA right now. It's not like you're going to have to pay out the nose to have him long term if you really wanted him. I don't know. It's just like I understand the whole controllable versus non-controllable situation, but you are a really good baseball team. In the past, when you wanted to win and you were a good baseball team, you added guys even if they were just rentals. You didn't have a problem with that. And now, all of a sudden, it's a problem just because you want to be better cost-controlled.
So, I know we got to take a break, but one thing that is always a subject of conversation after these trade deadlines is how Alex Cora is going to keep the team's head up.
Yes.
And keep him from pouting, keep himself from pouting. Rob Bradford, as I was reading a column earlier in our show, had an interesting detail about who was in the room. Who was in the room when the phone calls were being made and how that might change, alter, control Alex Cora's demeanor post-trade deadline. So perfect. I want to get to that after because I think it's really interesting.
Let's get to that next. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Full Sox Hour here. We got some football coming up in just a little bit. But, Mego, let's get into this Bradford piece that you mentioned, talking about Alex Cora and kind of where he's at post-trade deadline, with the trade deadline, all of that. You had set it up before the break here. What did you want to get into with this?
Yeah, so Bradford wrote this piece for WEI.com called The Inside Story of a Wild 2 Days at Fenway Park, and it's about Thursday, trade deadline day, into Friday night and the walk-off home run, first of his major league career by Roman Anthony. How exciting
that
was.
Great moment.
So it's a pretty positive article, I'd say, but there's this little nugget. I don't know if you had known this, but I think it's worth discussing. He writes, Cora walked out of Fenway Friday night with a feeling of hope and accomplishment. Those were easy emotions to muster. Just the day before, with nobody milling about Jersey Street, the manager had exited the premise carrying a far more complicated vibe. That was thanks to a very complicated and enlightening experience having witnessed the inner workings of a trade deadline. Quote, it was interesting, said Cora. I've never been in the room while that's going on, and it was a great learning experience. There were a lot of people, he added. People freaking grind, man. I just saw part of it, and they've been grinding for weeks. A lot of phone calls, a lot of moving parts. It's crazy, to be honest with you. It was fun to watch. I didn't have to make decisions. I was just sitting on the couch and looking at people. It was a good learning experience. Sam Kennedy added, it was great Alex was in the room. We were all there, more like cheerleaders. Brez and his team are doing the hardcore evaluations and decision-making on which guys to include in packages and which teams to call back and go after aggressively. So John Henry and Mike Gordon and myself and AC and Theo was in the room, adding his perspective as a mentor and as a coach. It was all hands on deck. For the first time in the room at the trade deadline. What does that say to you? Because I have my own thoughts, but I want to hear your gut reaction.
Well, hearing Kennedy, though, makes it just think that it's just kind of like an optics thing. Like, they didn't actually contribute. They were just...
No, they were cheerleaders.
Yes, exactly. Kennedy That's said. The word he used was cheerleaders.
Does Kennedy ever say anything that doesn't make somebody else in the inner sanctum of the Red Sox go, please don't say it that way.
Please stop talking.
We were cheerleaders.
What? No. Just say everybody was involved. You could have used the Patriots line. It was a collaborative effort.
Do you think Alex Cora ever wants to be described as a cheerleader?
No, absolutely not. Like, to me, this just screams an optics thing. And that's all it is. Like, it's not... It's their way of trying to show that everybody's on the same page. They're all communicating. It's the video from the Patriots draft war room when they drafted Mac Jones. Everybody good with this? Y'all good with this? We good? All right, let's do it.
I think it's a little deeper than that, Chime.
Okay, what do you got?
Alex Cora has said many times he does
intend
to be a manager forever. He does not want to be Terry Francona. He wants to move up into the front office and be in that role at some point. And I think that this was a little taste of that from the Red Sox. And it was in part not saying that he's going to take Craig Breslow's job, but saying, yeah, you're not in an official capacity going to be part of this trade deadline saying, like, don't go for that guy. You're going to be in the room, though. We want your presence here. And in a way, opening that door for him further into the front office and deeper into his relationship with ownership, which is the most important part of his stuff here, is saying after the trade deadline, put on a happy face because you were in the room. No pouting. No pouting because you disagree. You were in the room. Yeah, this was collaborative.
But like at the same time, you can't say, yeah, you're in the room, so put on a happy face if your opinions aren't even taken into consideration. Like if it would have, it would make more sense. That would be the case to me if Sam Kennedy had been like, yeah, Alex is weighing in on the different guys we were targeting, giving his takes on how they would fit into our club. Like that to me would be like, oh, okay, they wanted to involve him in all these discussions so that, you're right, after the trade deadline, no pouting, no mopey Alex. You got to be smile on and helping this team win as much as possible.
I just can kind of picture, this is maybe like too deep cut of a Simpsons reference. I just picture them like opening the door like Mr. Burns with the, when he has like 1,000 monkeys writing on typewriters and he's like, they're constructing the perfect American novel.
It's the Superman. It happened. They did it. They made the exact reference to Superman.
It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. And it's like Dustin May.
But like that's, I think that's because Sam Kennedy wouldn't use the word cheerleader if the point was to get Alex in the room and make sure he was kind of in line.
Well,
more or
see,
less.
I think that this is another,
like, cheerleader think, is like demeaning.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but I don't think Kennedy sees it that way. I think they thought, let's bring Alex in the room. We know eventually he wants to be a part of this kind of operation. Give him a taste of it. Show him that we see him that way. We want him literally in the room with us and that he's all a big part of what we're doing here in the future. And then Kennedy's like, yeah, we're all sitting there like cheerleaders waiting for our guys after the game.
It just, it harkens back to the idea that Craig Breslow just prints out a bunch of information and has Alex Cora, quote unquote, synthesize the information. Like that to me, that's what it shows me, is that Cora doesn't actually do anything. Wiggy was trying to make this argument all last week that Cora, if Cora wants to say in something, he was the one that wanted Alex Bregman on the team. He can go help this team get
traded.
Well,
you don't think that's true. I mean, he had the relationship with Alex Bregman.
Yeah, that one instance might be true. He might have been pushing very hard for them to get Alex Bregman, but according to reports at the time, so was Sam Kennedy. Sam Kennedy was on board with the idea,
well,
and Craig Breslow was the one that wasn't.
I don't think Sam Kennedy carries that much weight.
I understand, but my overall point is that Alex Cora doesn't actually have a say in anything. He was in the room as a quote-unquote cheerleader. He wasn't there for an opinion. He wasn't there for just a,
so
hey,
here's
Alex,
the other
how do you
part
feel
of
about
this,
this player?
Is Kennedy calling Cora and himself, to be fair,
yep,
cheerleaders to keep that distance between Cora and the front office?
Or yeah, Cora and Breslow.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Cora was in the room, but he was just a cheerleader like me.
So basically, Sam Kennedy has taken a side where he is on Alex Cora's side. And
No. I think it's the opposite. Yeah, Cora was in the room, but we're just cheerleaders. Like, Cora wasn't in the room because he was telling them who to get or who to stay away from. He just wanted to give them a little taste of the front office. Look how hard these guys are working the phones, and that's just one day. They've been doing this for weeks.
Oh, so try and force Alex Cora to have respect for the front office.
Maybe a little bit.
Nah.
This is what you want?
He might
There's
be.
Taste.
He might be doing that. That might be the reason behind it, but I don't know. It feels weird to me. It feels propped up and kind of just like, hey, look at us. Alex Cora's in the room, everybody. See, we're a team. We communicate.
It's not like they released a video like the Patriots
at
the deadline.
But they gave quotes. Like it's not like they completely ignored
it. Our intrepid columnist Rob Bradford. I haven't seen this elsewhere.
Great columnist.
I haven't seen that information elsewhere.
Neither
and
have I.
So I thought it was curious. I thought it was noteworthy. Alex Cora was in the room at the trade deadline. What do you think that means? Is it because he wants to be part of the front office? Is it because the front office and ownership want him to be a good foot soldier for them and make sure that they don't turn into droopy dogs after this trade deadline? I think that there's something there.
617-779-7937. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like Alex Cora was part of it. Do you feel like he was being taught a lesson? Do you think he was being brought in? How do you feel? We're also going to get into some football now. It's time for a football hour with Mego and Chime. It wouldn't be a Mego and Chime program without some football talk. So we're going to get into Drake May. Mego was there at last night's blue versus white scrimmage.
It was incredible.
She's been at training camp for, what, 9 days of training camp, correct?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we're going to get it.
However many days.
We'll get into all of that coming up next here on Mego and Chime on Boston Sports Original WEEI.